And then just go up four lines and ask him, I hope that he's all right. All right. That's all. Okay.
Members, thank you for being back on time. We're at a point when the Honourable Kachalia had just raised the issue of contracts. You will recall that, Honourable Kachalia, and we were getting an explanation there. But what I'm doing here, and I'll put a 2 here, we'll flag it again. It would seem that the first part of it was acceptable in terms of the previous one. We'll work with the Principal Act there. But when it came to the issue around royalties regarding literary or musical works, Clause 6-7, no amendments, but Clause 7, Section 7A, we're just putting a second flagging on. Does everyone hear what has been said there? The one that starts off, the DTI proposed that this clause be deleted. All right, it starts off like that. Then it goes on to say, if retained, it should be amended in this way, etc. The Honourable Kachalia raised the issue of the contracts. I hope I've captured you correctly here, Honourable Kachalia. Right. We can then move on. Oh, yes, Advocate van der Merwe.
Sorry, Jay, I might just be confused, but that was raised in respect of Clause 5, yes, Section 6A, yes, not yes, 7.
Sorry, it is page 6A.
Yeah.
That's right.
It was raised in respect of 6A.
That's right.
Yeah.
We then were able to move on, or are able to move on, and I look at the next flagged issue.
All right. Now, I haven't got a second tick or cross here. It's under Clause 77A, flagged. Yes, Dr. Masocha?
Chair, on 7A, we did go and relook at the other artistic works,
yes.
And although what we had in mind was around the original artworks, we have reconsidered and we think that 7A should be retained for the other artworks that are not affected by artistic resale royalties, where you have your original paintings that are being resold. So for the other types of artworks, we are saying that we would like to retain, we propose to retain this 7A and also adopt the proposal by advocate on the wording of the clause.
Precisely what wording are you talking about right here? Is that under 7A in the next block?
Yes, Chair.
Are we all with both Dr.
Masocha and the advocate? Right. Remember, we're only looking at the flagged issues. Let's get that clear. Now, there are quite a few here as I turn over, and we see Clause 7, Section 7C. Consider a method for artists, proof of author, to register work so that it cannot be adapted later by a company. Do you remember that one? And the other point about, well, that's the first flagging. Is this only in relation to literary works? And what the advocate, you've noted here that it would be a better fit in Section 21, ownership of copyright. All right. See the department agreeing with you there. This will have to be advertised, though, for comments. Why are we advertising? We are advertising what is new, in inverted commas, to our bill. So if we are still of the opinion that we sent this through like that, then it means we must flag it. Do we agree? And when they flag it, it'll be one of the issues that will have to be advertised. Looking at everyone, that's everyone in agreement. The second aspect, though, is indigenous cultural expressions, indigenous community. DTI is of the view that these phrases cannot be, can be deleted, as the reliance will be on the DST bill. The concern is that committee cannot legislate on a bill that has not yet been passed. But you indicated, Dr. Masoccia, that you would, we could wait and see when this is passed, or note that it would be effective when the DST. Is this correct? Yes, Dr. Masoccia.
Thank you, Chair. What we have proposed as a DTI is that we align with the DST institutional mechanisms around indigenous knowledge. And as soon as the legislation has been passed, we would align to those institutional frameworks. But we do note the concern of the advocate that what happens if the legislation is not passed. And I think for this process, Chair, we can propose that the reference to national trust be removed, and then we leave indigenous community, but then we take into account the transitional issue of the other bill that is still, yeah.
All right. Because that is directly related then to the IPLA, as you see in the transitional amendment, a provision. And if we accept that, looking at all members, yes, Honourable Manta.
I think it makes sense, Chair.
All right. Are we all in agreement then? So far, we're at the bottom of this page here, you know, the matrix. It's not numbered really, but it's Clause 7, Section 7C. And originally we had the two flags, and then we had a proposal underneath. Right. So we've converged, as it were. All right? Fine. We then move on to turn over the page of this matrix, Clause 7, Section 7D, no amendments. Clause 7, Section 7E, flagged. The indigenous community here. And the view of DTI, it says, can be deleted. It'll be in the DST bill. But again, we come back to the same point we've just made. Is that not so, Dr. Masoccia?
Chair, I would propose that everywhere where reference is made to this, that we treat it the same way.
To have a transitional clause as well, then, should that be the case. All right, are we all on the same page? That if the DST bill is not passed, we will then follow and adopt our contingency approach, which is the transitional clause. A transitional clause, which speaks about it would be aligned to the DST when it becomes effective. All right. Then that takes care of those. Clause 9, Section 8A. Right. And I've just noticed here that we're moving on to page 12 of the bill. And no amendments required. Clause 10, Section 9. Clause 11, Section 9A, provide for log sheets to be kept. And then you've got a couple of flaggings. It's around the whole issue of an offence and a definition, and we've had got, I'm leaving the indigenous community out, we've already taken a decision there, but should failure to report fully be an offence? Right, I want comment on this now. Input. Come on, we're now dealing with the flagged ones. What is the value of a log sheet? Let's get that, so that why are we turning this into an offence? Yes, Dr. Masoccia?
Thank you, Chair. Log sheets are very important because it's data that enables the payments of royalties. So if users are using the works, they're using the music, and they don't keep proper records, it becomes difficult to then be able to give the benefits to the members or the artists. So because then the payments and the distribution of royalties become affected without that information. So logsheet is a very important part of the royalty systems in terms of the economic benefits to our artists.
That is one of the core reasons for the bill, Honourable Khadebe.
Elevated
now. Oh. Must be withdraw it.
On record is wrong. There's only one doctor, yes, Dr. Masoch.
Chairperson, the issue of the logsheet is very important. It's very important. We must have, because that's the only way in which there can be accrued royalties for the performers and the creators of this art. But what is also important, Chair, we must also not dump the previous provision, although they said it is long and tedious. We need that. Let's say if someone produces a song and then a particular radio station is going to play it, they must bounce with that person that is, hey guys, we are going to use this song later, so that person can be alerted. Yeah, if you must just not hear it from the air, or when it's already blasted up, when there is no formal communication or agreement before. I think that the long process must still be in, but add the log sheets on top of that.
All right. I think that's clear, but we're going to take members here. Honourable Buyani. Honourable Tiako, can I take you after Honourable Pachalia, as you did chair that subcommittee, and you'll put the final word. Honourable Buyani.
Chair, thanks. I just wanted to check, man, because in terms of the log sheet, if it was there in the needly time, one, it was going to be proper for us. But then now we're using the report revolution technologies. How is that going to be possible for me to play a song and be able to be recorded on that other side as well? That is what I just want to check.
Do we have a concern raised, DTI? Honourable Kachalia?
Yeah, I agree with the importance of this, but we just need to guard it at about two things, at making it cumbersome in the first instance, and secondly, how it's going to be enforced. Because without enforcement, you can do anything you like. Where are you going to go with this? So those issues are very important. Because, for example, Honourable Chief Whip's comments on saying that people need to be flagged that their song is going to be played. What constitutes the proper communication? Do you send them an email and assume they've got it? Do you get, it's very difficult. So what constitutes non-cumbersome or proper communication and enforcement are particularly key, and I'm not sure that we have it here.
All right, so you're saying, yes, that is important, we need to look at it, but the enforcement aspect here is very important as well. Honourable Tiako?
Kachalia has promoted Honourable Whip as a Chief Whip. The chances here are many. I want to check with, I think we spoke lately about this. The issue of permission that should be sourced, and can you also explain to us the log sheet per se? Do we need to do advertisement on this one for comments or what? So that we don't come back again and we deal with this matter and say we left this while we were discussing. So can you summarize it and tell us the pros and the cons, and then and the issue of permission vis-a-vis the issue of and advertising in that respect, Advocate?
I think this point about enforcement is important. We've said if it's going to be an offence, then that is part of the enforcement process. But are we going to have some form of inspectorate? How are we going to check that you didn't keep your log sheet? You know, how are we checking if we've constituted it as an offence? You had your hand up, Honourable Tierko. Right, Honourable Tierko, Honourable Mantash, as Honourable Hadebe. Right.
Sure, I wanted Advocate to first outline that process on that one. Once we understand everyone, then we'll be able to put our input correctly. Because now we'll be all over the show, and then the next thing, we don't get it right again.
No, look. Let's take that point. Advocate Van der Merwe, you hear the concerns expressed. Just take us through.
Thank you, Chief. Actually, I've got my clause right. Oh, here we go. So, Chair, what happens with the log sheet? It is it's a different way of trying to achieve the same result. So what the concern was is that songs are being played on the radio, etc., but there is no record. It's very difficult for an artist to keep their ear on every radio station, every TV, every etc. out there. So it's very difficult to determine who must pay you what. And so what was suggested in the bill as introduced is a process whereby the person would, if they intend to perform any act in 9A, B or C, in other words, regarding the nature of copyright and sound recording, they must then, before they actually perform that act, in fact, I want to read to members what that would be, so we don't talk about numbers, because that doesn't help us. 9A, an act in 9C, broadcasting the sound recording. 9D, causing the sound recording to be transmitted in a diffusion service. 9E, communicating the sound recording to the public. So if any of those three things are being done, then what the bill is introduced proposed was the person who intends to do that must, in a prescribed way, submit a notice to the performer or the copyright owner or the collecting society or the indigenous community and say, I intend to broadcast the sound recording. Then in that notice, they must say, what would be the date of that performance, what would be the terms and conditions of payment of a royalty, and they must request that performer or copyright owner to sign the proposal in the notice. Then, if that person, so that is what the ideal is, if they didn't do that, then they must, as soon as possible, after they have now broadcasted the sound recording, then notify the performer, copyright owner, collecting society, pay the generally applicable license fees, and pay royalties from the date of first use. Then the person who received that notice, so the performer, copyright owner, collecting society, must as soon as reasonably practical, upon receipt of that notice, respond to it. If that performer rejects the proposal or proposes different terms and conditions, then it may be referred to the tribunal, and the tribunal must adjudicate on it. Now, the problem is this might work perhaps for a song that will be performed at a concert in 3 months' time. But if you want to play it on the radio because someone phoned in and requested the song, it becomes problematic. And that is where the concern about the cumbersome came in. Now, that is then when DTI said, well, look, what we want to do is we need to find a way for people to get their royalties. So the proposal then is, let's look at a log sheet. So what you will do is the person who wants to broadcast, to cause the sound recording to be transmitted in a diffusion service or communicating it to the public will then keep, let's say it's like a spreadsheet. This is on this day, this is the song, this is the artist, this is the collecting society, and you can appoint someone by the radio station, can appoint someone to say you need to make a recording of every song that is played, and then that, of course, will go. Together with that comes the question of enforcement. It is a little bit of a difficult situation, but then, with all due respect, if it is, for instance, an offence, and you have someone say, but on this day I was listening, I heard the song play, it's not in your log sheet. You have a witness that will say, I heard the song play, I'm quite sure that through the radio you'll be able to go through the records of that day and you will be able to track the song. And then, of course, it would be an offence. So it makes it very a big risk for these big companies, your radio stations, TVs, to not have a proper recording.
Okay. Well, I think that's self-explanatory now. That's certainly helped. Honorable Khadebe?
Chairperson, the issue of cumbersomeness is the issue of hiding behind the thumb. Because when they say it's cumbersome, they don't want to pay. So the issue here is that we know very well, even if a new artist comes into being, someone is introduced, 2017, Zogwanda comes with a blockbuster. So if you come with a blockbuster, it is the responsibility of the radio stations. They have researchers that who are the new artists which are coming up. But I think that what we can do, we must make this thing an offense for not to have a register. But what if they're interested in that, they must go up front, ahead, that we're interested in your work, what agreement, right? Yeah. So that it does not have to depend on a phone call or whatever is happening, but that thing can be done. But when coming to the issue of enforcement, Chairperson, we know very well that even in labor, there's sectoral determination. The domestic workers are expected to pay are supposed to be paid a particular salary. But you want to tell me that the Department of Labor will have enough inspectors to go to each and every house? The answer is no. But if it's the law, if the law is there, that is an offense, you know what they do? Even these inspectors, what they do, they just pick. They just pick randomly. That on this month, we just focus, let's say, we focus on Metro. They just pick randomly and see whether they are complying with that. So the issue of implementation is not a trans mesh. Okay. It can be done as it is done in other sectors. Thank you.
Well, look, I'm looking at everyone sitting here now and all the parties. It's certainly, one's heard enough support and argument to indicate that yes, it should be an offence not to keep a log sheet or log book or whatever. Our concern was about, well, how do you enforce it, etc. We've had one input here from Honourable Khadebe indicating, well, it can be. You can do this in terms of random inspection. So, as I don't see any hands just shooting up, I would see this as having been addressed. I'm looking at the members. So, agreed? Right. Let's move on then. And, the log sheets. Right. Then we come, I turned over the page to clause 14, selection 12A, the bottom, because earlier there were no amendments, etc. And we have the first use of the word in the matrix hybrid, and which seemed to be the approach the committee has adopted. See, I'm just smiling here because I see the word anchored. Some of our colleagues may recall discussions around the anchor. Right. Honourable Manta.
Chair, I remember last week that Dr. Masocha was saying he was not agreeing to the fair use. He was not agreeing to us anchoring the hybrid to the fair use. And we fought here. So I want to know if he's still stuck to her argument, and if so, he must give us a reason so that we can understand, because we as the ANC have had agreed that we will anchor this hybrid model to fair use for reasons. So I want to hear the doctor's argument, because that day he made us to be uncomfortable.
Well, look, it didn't sound like it was only the ANC that has agreed. Sounds like the committee agreed. I wasn't here, but it certainly would look like that. I'm not going to rule your comments out, because I would still allow Dr. Masocha to respond to you, but perhaps, yeah, let's just finish that aspect before I turn the page. Do you want, you know, it sounds like you had quite a robust discussion then.
We did. We had quite a robust discussion, Che. Honorable Mandashe, we went back as a collective, and we were very mindful of what happened here in the committee around the fair use, anchoring on the fair use. And I'm going to respond on the basis of what the Singapore model has done, rather than making it about the DCI. They have anchored theirs on fair dealing, because they were coming from the fair dealing perspective, like we are coming from fair dealing in our original legislation. They've worded it on fair dealing and added the exceptions. So you start with your fair, they started with the fair dealing and they added. And we did an exercise as well from our side. It's in the same light. We started with the from section 12. We started with the we added on the list of what has already been provided by the legislation, and we also undertook to provide a written response. So, Chair, if it's okay, tomorrow we will bring something. We've prepared something, but we wanted to just make sure that it's 100%, so we'll bring it tomorrow. But I'll just say briefly what we added.
I'm listening. That's amazing.
Okay, so what we've added is around the issues around the scholarship, the teaching and education. We also added the issues around the libraries and archives on 12. And then the list will include most of the clauses in Section 12. For example, your adaptations and reproductions, we will include those because they make allowances for what we would like to also include around the other sections that are specific to libraries, archives, and museums, and to issues of people with disabilities. And looking at the issues around the computer programs, we initially did not have it in, but we thought in terms of the educational activities, we could include the computers on educational activities. These are just proposals, but the models that we have seen, they start with fair dealing, if that was the anchor. So, Chair, I'm mindful of the fact that I nearly got in trouble last week on this, but I have to advise or give a view based on what is available. Yeah, thank you.
That's right, and you survived, so there we are. you came back, Honourable Chirko.
If we are continuing with that line, meaning our position is not clear to the department, because we said we need something which is, we are going to anchor in fair use. So when they come here every day with the fair dealing stuff, meaning this exercise is neither there nor anywhere, because we can't keep on meeting every day. We have given her our position. She keeps on coming back with the same position that she's retaining of her fair deal. And answer me, she helped me here. What is the purpose of us coming here and have given them a directive to say this is what we want, and when they come, same status remain, unless I don't understand what she's saying.
No, we certainly hear you, Honourable Tierko, Honourable Mantash, followed by Honourable Khadebe. From Honourable Mantash, Honourable Kacharia, Honourable Khadebe.
I think we must give the doctor a chance to bring the presentation that they prepared, because he says he wants In fact, we want a scholarly view, so that we are not challenged when the bill is tabled. Yes, we can. It is in our hearts that we wanted to anchor it on fair use. But the reason why I raise it today, I want us to, get a, you know, something that will not be challengeable, that we cannot be taken to court to. Yes, we have put our hearts to say we want this. But if that is going to compromise the effectiveness of what we're trying to do, it will not do us good. That's why we need the advices from the department and the advocate. Yes, we want to enter it on fair use, but give us a scholarly view on the matter.
Right. I'm going to take the Honourable Kachalia.
Chair, I'm agreeing with the Honourable Mantashe in that this subcommittee certainly looked carefully at this issue, and I certainly went back and did some homework on the issue to understand the difference between fair use and fair dealing. The result of my limited study was to concur and say that it should be anchored in fair use, because fair use as opposed to fair dealing, which has a limited number of exceptions, fair use is open-ended and enables technological innovation by not closing to being to foresee technological developments and the like. And therein, I think, is our agreement in that it should be anchored in that particular area. Yeah. And that does seem to make sense. And if the committee is of that opinion, it would need to be swayed by some cogent argument to the contrary. We haven't seen that yet.
No, I'm just going to have our whip, Honourable Khadebe.
Chair, as I was in an unfortunate position of chairing last week, this issue of trying to chop the DDG said I had to go and protect it, actually, literally so. But exactly. The unenviable position left me in. But what was very important, Chair, when I summarized on that issue, because across the board it was agreed upon, NC said hybrid, Honourable Albert said all the people must be defended, fair dealing type, and then, so it was the issue of, and then Honourable McPherson was very clear, middle ground, we need the middle ground. Mm-hmm. So what is important, Chair, the final, what you said, we said that she must come with the two templates.
Yes.
When she moves away from fair dealing, when she anchors this thing on fair use, we must have them side by side so that we can make an informed decision. What I really appeal for, let us have those two things in front of us, and they will make a fair. And then I'm telling you, that one is a scholarly exercise, because we'll be taking all sides, and then we'll come with a hybrid at the end of the day. Because as you said, that the issue of fair use is still there, that's what we believe in, because this exploitation happened under fair dealing. Thank you.
No, thank you, members. I can hear that this was thoroughly thrashed out. And members have also said they've done serious homework, if only of a short period. I certainly was part of some short period in which we thrashed this out, in which there were robust views for and against, so we were able to benefit from each other. You see, what I always recall on this is the Berne Convention was in the 19th century, if I'm not mistaken. And we all know what was available then. And then we moved forward on the matter. And at this point in time, we do know that technology is moving at an incredibly fast rate. Where I'm sure once we've written this act and it's adopted in the House, we may find new forms of copyright needing new words to accommodate them. That's how fast things are moving. And my understanding of the committee, from what they've said here, is that they would rather, in this day and age of the 21st century, and the intention of the current government, the ANC government, to foster innovation, to have this open approach to matters. And I'd be the first to agree that when you are open, yes, mistakes can happen, challenges arise, that is so. But then it simply means we've got to be more observant, track this more closely, and try to identify some of the more serious things that could happen. But when you look at the purpose, the reason d'etre for this copyright piece of legislation, it has been because so many South Africans who formerly did not enjoy the full rights that the minority enjoyed truly did not benefit under copyright at all. Not at all. I'd like to know which African could even lodge a patent, could even have their works protected or enjoy the royalties. It simply was not possible given the classifications of black Africans. And we don't want to go down that street. What we are saying is it is incumbent on us as legislators to say, this is the current environment. When was this last piece of legislation and what prevailed at that time? And the analogy for me is very much that Agricultural Act of 1978, which is not even the 19th century but the 20th, in which it said black farmers were illegal, black sugar farmers. And that certainly was grounded in law. It was grounded in law, apartheid law. It's not grounded, it wasn't illegal then. That was the law. And no country in the world would have disputed that internationally in terms of ownership. So we realized, look, it took us so long, and then you simply have one of the shortest bills, if not the shortest, in South Africa, which only says three things. Black sugarcane farmers are no longer illegal. Have a bill to put that through. Now, the one thing, I may not be the fastest learner, but one thing is I don't need to learn a lesson twice. And I learnt my lesson then, hard, that I cannot forget the environment we are living in or the context. And what is our goal? And I do know the DTI, including yourself, Dr. Masocha, are intent on us achieving that goal. We simply perhaps are seeing it parallel. But what we are saying to the department, and we will certainly ask our legal advisor, Advocate Van der Merwe, Charmaine Van der Merwe, is to ensure that our view prevails in Parliament. So we want to ensure that by anchoring it to fair use, we address the critical issues you see as, look, this is a weak area here, this is something we've got to deal with, and that is what we want the department to do for us. But having said that, Honourable Khadebe, I also think one must accept what the members are saying here. We would very much like this matrix, double matrix, or whatever that was requested or that the DTI offered to be brought to the committee tomorrow morning. Can we agree on that? So the position as it stands is we have decided, the committee, unless someone can prove it's unconstitutional, that we will use a hybrid model which will take some of the aspects of fair dealing but anchor it to the principle of fair use. Now, I don't want us to debate it further, but I will hear your comment, Honourable Mashendri, is it? I hope I've got it right. Yes, Mashendri, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. If you would indulge me a little bit.
Oh, look, we don't indulge anyone.
But just I'd just like to create some clarity on where we are in terms of the model and the current B-Bull before all of us. So the B-Bull is a hybrid model based on Singapore. That's what we have before us. And I wasn't in the meeting last week, but so I'm going to steer away from the words anchoring. So what happens is, and I thank the honourable members who've gone and researched this, let's avoid the semantics for now on whether it's called fair use or fair dealing. It's an exception to the law. No,
no, do proceed. There's one chair.
Okay. It's about how far you are willing to open up your exception. So why you have the fair dealing name, those are Commonwealth countries like South Africa, where we had a essentially British copyright law. And the Commonwealth countries had a fair dealing doctrine, which is a list. And if your purpose doesn't fall within that defined list, it's out. So what countries started moving, for all the reasons we've listed today, technology, the knowledge economy is dying, we're in the digital economy, they said, well, we don't want to be left behind, let's open up the exception. And that's why it becomes a hybrid. Although it's a fair dealing Commonwealth history, you open up your provision, and they've opened it up by transplanting the U.S. fair use provision. So that's how they've incorporated fair use into the hybrid. So they start off, which is what we have, is we have our list of purposes, and the bill has that. And then you have the more open, flexible fair use provision, which is in the bill. So the clarity I want to provide is that we have opened up the exception to a fair use doctrine in the B-Bull. You'll see the advocate has highlighted the magic words, as it was called, the such as has been added in the bill, and that is what opens up the exception. The only difference what we as the DTI did in the bill is we called it an out-and-out fair use provision. But what we did in the drafting style was take the Singapore model and we opened up our fair dealing provision to take into consideration technology, artificial intelligence, the education, the disabled, and those interlinkages. So that's the rationale why I'm trying to say that as much as we get stuck on the words, it's about opening up that exception from a closed system, because fair dealing was closed, and the understanding I'm getting from the committee members is they want to go more open, which is what is in the B-Bull. It is a hybrid. It was based on the Singapore model. And we have that mixture, and it was actually in our presentation last week. I just want to read it to everyone. So what our current clause in the bill? It's a mixture of the general fair use style factors for lawful use combined with the specific list. And then to safeguard against abuse and misuse, we took exactly what Singapore has. You'll see there's a four-step test there. We've got those four factors that if you are substituting the market, it will not be a fair use. So, and that is also in line with the Byrne three-step test. So this model before you is a Singapore hybrid model, and then I will now use the word anchored in fair use. It's an open provision that is flexible, that will allow...
I'm just a little bit confused. Earlier on, I heard someone in DTI saying Singapore was fair deal. Now, you're saying, no, the Singapore model is anchored in fair use. Could you clarify that?
Okay, so Singapore is fair dealing. Like I said, all Commonwealth countries, no, it is a fair dealing system like we had in the Principal Act. The Principal Act had a fair dealing system. But Singapore didn't change what their system was called. They opened up the exception based on the U.S. fair use provision.
All right, now, look, Anita, so you her to complete what
she's saying. We've made Ms. Machendry a little nervous. Do continue.
So the Singapore's fair dealing is modeled on the US fair use provision. They just don't call it fair use, sticking to Commonwealth roots. And I think that's what the DDG was trying to emphasize, and I may have confused it. And that's why I said in the introduction, Commonwealth countries had fair dealing. But because of the technology advancements, they are opening up their fair dealing provisions to model them on the U.S. fair use provision. So even though it's called fair dealing, it's essentially practiced as a fair use provision because they have opened up the exception for technology. If I'm clear now.
I think you're extremely clear, so what it tells me is let's call a spade a spade. It is fair use.
Yeah.
You've just said it is practicing, and I just think that even the back benches here should allow the front benches to have their say, huh? Otherwise it makes everyone nervous. We're not sure what's coming in from the back and the side and I don't know where else. All right. But all I'm saying is we have heard you. You've given us a balance approach to both, but where it takes my understanding to, that's my personal understanding, is while we may be calling Singapore the fair deal using fair use, with clearer spectacles on and earphones, we may be able to know that it's fair use. That's more or less in practice what is operating in practice. So if in practice it's X, let's use X. Honorable Hadebe?
Chairperson, I'm very happy with the explanation coming from the chief director. But what is very important, I concur with you. Let's call a spade now, because there were reasons why. We raised the issue of U.S., South Korea, and Israel, that the economies of those countries are very strong because of the model they have used. We know very well that the countries which use the fair dealing model, they tend to have retrogressed. I don't want to name any countries, but in the economic front, they have retrogressed. And then number two, Chair, was the issue that I like it was raised by Honorable Albert again.
Yes.
He said we cannot transpose something from another country direct as it is.
Mm.
We must determine our situation first, what we want, what we want to address. The issue of access, that's what we want to address. And then fair use is going to address that access. But we still maintain that list, but anchored around the issue of fair use share. I think that's how the discussions...
Members, and I know some of you are sort of, you know, your fingers are jumping all over the Google at home, etc. Now, from the little I saw there myself, but what we had in the workshop, the workshop was very valuable, is that think of this Berne Convention, etc., when you were looking at copyright, the 19th century. Look at the countries that first decided to model and theorize on what copyright is. They are, you know, if one may call it the old world, by that I mean Europe, the old world. And indeed, perhaps that's how it came out. But now you have the new world, and by the new world, I'm talking the Americas, Africa, and parts of Asia. And when you look at that particular issue, and if you wanted to go back and include China, their first approach and attempt at copyright was anchored on Confucius, which is open, totally open. I mean, they didn't bother to use the word use. It was just open, you see. Now, of course, they too have decided to lock in a few things. So it gives us food for thought, but what we need to do as legislators is focus on our objectives here. What are our objectives here? And how do we best reach it? I suppose the department, the advocate, everyone sitting in the room, including those who seem to be researchers on the back bench there, are saying that, you know what, we agree on hybrid. Yes. In other words, neither one of these is the best. That's an acknowledgement already. So if neither one of them are the best, why still stay with horse-drawn wagons? Why not say, okay, unless fair dealing is going to compromise the goals of our constitution, the objectives and what we want to achieve in our country, then let's use fair use. If anyone can share with us as a committee tomorrow where fair dealing would be far in far greater support of our constitution and objectives than fair use, we may be persuaded differently. But as we sit here this afternoon, it is a hybrid within the broader framework. We won't even use this word anchored. It sounds like the Titanic going down, it seems. So, you know, we just use a broader framework of fair use. That's where we are. We'll leave this whole talk of anchoring out. Let's move on. Now, in your, we did, of course, have your apology, Honourable MacPherson, and that was fully understood, etc. But just, your colleague will show you where we are on the matrix, but I thought we had moved to about clause 14, 12C or something. Was it 12B? Because it's a flag there. Clause 14, 12B, page 17 of the bill. Yes, Dr. Masocha?
Chair, just to assist with the way forward on that, the work we're in terms of what we need to prepare for the department.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a request just for a way forward for us to know what we need to prepare for the committee for tomorrow regarding that issue of the fair use, fair dealing, and the hybrid model.
Let me allow members to come in before I come in. Yes, Honourable Kachalia, Honourable Tiako.
I hear the DTI when they talk about Singapore. As I understand it in a rudimentary way, the Singapore revision was to balance in a real way users' rights and owners' rights, and then they incorporated fair use within the exceptions, if you like, to expand that, and I think that speaks to the hybrid model that the committee was talking about. So my suggestion would be is that with the view, if you could unpack for us the Singapore model insofar as it applies to us, the efficacy of our legal system, the tradition of our legal system, how it fits into the previous act, all these things are important, and then say, then we can see how that, whether that actually fits the committee's requirements, which are anchored on the side of fair use. So if we then look at what you're proposing and we say, actually, it makes sense, we go with it. But let's not, because I do think that the Singaporeans have applied their mind in a particular way. Let's understand it and see if it fits us. Mm. If it doesn't, the committee will tell you what fits us.
All right. Look, and I'm so sorry, is that Ms. Mabasa Mavungo?
I just wanted to ensure that I understand. Previously, the request was that we do two matrix.
Yeah.
Yes, that's
so, so, from what Mission represented, the bill as it stands is anchored on fair use. So I don't know the matrix that we can prepare to assist the committee. How can we come up with that if the bill as it stands is anchored on fair use? The DDG did mention that we prepared. We worked on a hybrid that is anchored on from Singapore that we can provide, which expands fair dealing. I just want clarity on what the second one, which is a model that is anchored on fair use, whereas the bill is anchored, like Mishendra said, is close up from fair use.
Ms. Mabasa Mavongo, you did also indicate it's actually the Singapore model, which is actually based on fair dealing. So, you know, one could say one is speaking with eyes in different direction or ears. But let us, I just want to get some point here, some advice I had requested. So hold on, colleagues, I will come back. All right, no, it, you know, colleagues, one must always take advice as well. So, I see another front being formed to take us forward in the battle, Honorable Diego.
As much as you consult from your neighbor, can you give us 5 minutes? We need to sort out something. Please, we need to do something before.
No, look, members, you see there were two things. One, I said if a flag takes too long, we're going to leave it. And I did say that. So I don't want to change our position from that. So far, there is a flag. We've had to flag something and leave it. I want us to be able to come back to this one, but it's going to be after, I believe there is a tea break, isn't there? Or did you scrap it?
I was just a break. Maybe
there will
be water.
Well, let's hope Cape Town can provide water, right. At that tea break, we will have a little extended tea break and be able to discuss issues. So I want to take this further. Look, I always like to persuade the department, and we have not been entirely successful, notwithstanding they take instructions from this committee, including the minister. So, but nevertheless, let us first work on the persuasion before coming heavy-handed. All right? So we're going to leave this one for the moment. We're coming back. So we're now moving to Clause 14, 12C. I'm not going back on that model, Honourable Macpherson. At the moment, we flag.
I'm allowed to. You cannot make a comment on it.
Well, the point is, before you return, we've already taken a decision, and I've stopped even the Honourable Tiako from commenting, and it would be very unfair for me to reopen. Sorry. Clause 14.12c, page 20. That's the list of exceptions, which there was no dispute about. Clause 14.12d. There was a flagged issue on IPLA, which we've already addressed. Do you want to address it again? No. We have already addressed that and said, wherever we see this DST bill, which has not yet passed, and it's no longer not yet an act, we will adopt the same approach. Is that not so? So we're still going to stick to that. We then... Advocate van der Merwe.
Apologies, Chair. Just on Section 12B, there is another flag issue there. The issue of Subsection 1, Paragraph J, Roman numeral 1, which reads that if you read it with the whole section, it's copyright in a work shall not be infringed by any of the following acts. Then J says, on page 19, the making of a copy of such work by an individual of Roman numeral 1, the individual's own copy of the work. And the concern is that if you have a copy of the work, you received it in a legitimate way, whatever, one of the other exceptions apply to you, can you now then go and make 100 copies and distribute that? And that could not be as in the intention here. So that is just one of the concerns that have been flagged to consider.
Yes. 14 section, oh, you, it's above there. Right, 14 section 12b. Right. On that one, 19, members, have you applied your minds to this particular one, Honourable Khadebe?
Chairperson, I understand the concern of the advocate. If it is the individual work, it cannot, a person cannot reproduce 10 copies for that matter, if it's a textbook. I can make an example. These textbooks we are speaking about are very expensive because they usually come from abroad. So what you usually do as a student, you know, to preserve your book, you copy the book and on your everyday work on a photostat copy instead of taking the entire volume around because it can disappear in the library wherever you are. So you tend to photocopy that, but it's not for transmission, but for individual use. Individual use cannot be 5 copies. It cannot be 10 copies. So I think that aspect must be kept, that it is not for transmission or for commercial purposes. But for individual, once I buy a copy, it is mine. It is my copy. Let's say I do Frank Ayers Jr. Mathematics, calculus, Frank Ayers Jr., that's my copy I bought. But I know that if I can go with it to the library, I go to the toilet. When I come back, it will not be there. So the safest way, when you go in a public space, you go with something photocopied, so that you keep your original book is there. That's how I save my books. You can go at home, all of them, they're still there. Precisely because of that.
Can I ask you, it would appear to be a digression, but it isn't. How many licenses do you need if you have a license for yourself on a TV?
Yeah, one.
You only need one, even if you buy two sets for yourself. Don't need two licenses. Now, I because that kind of argument just reminded me of that. So, would you not, I notice here, Advocate, that under the G on the previous page 18, refers to this, it's a bona fide, you're using it genuinely for yourself. And many of us do this. We don't want our textbooks with all the highlighter all over, and they're very heavy. So, are we not going to agree to condone that and accept that, looking at members? Yes. All right, with hands waving all round, we move forward. Right. And page 22 of the bill, then clause 15, 16, 17, 18, no amendments. All right? Fine. We then moved to clause 19, section 19B, where it was flagged. General exceptions regarding protection, and we spoke about the we did discuss this just a wee bit, but it is flagged, and I didn't tick it, which means, Advocate, you referred to the issue of hardware being, software was covered but not hardware. Is that correct?
Yes, there were two concerns raised. The one was to say, or not concern, there were proposals that the clause be broadened. The one from Anton Moster, Chair, was that it also be made available for teaching purposes, educational use, providing disabled access. And then from UCT, there was for that is also in respect of hardware, not only software. And if you need to repair products that are subject to copyrighted software, I think the example on the repair products was when you have a car. Most cars nowadays have software. And in order to repair the vehicle, you need to be able to access the software. But if you're not that licensed dealer, then you need to almost hack the computer to get in there and fix the car because you don't have the right to access it. So that was the proposal there. The DDI said they would agree definitely to the inclusion for teaching and educational activities.
Are you then saying, Advocate, and let me address this to the DTI, that you didn't agree with the example of the motor car and the software? You remember what the advocate has just indicated now, that, well, you know, if you don't have that license and your car goes in for a repair, you know, illegally, you're not really allowed to tamper with it, in inverted commas, to repair it, so they hack into it, which technically is illegal, you could argue. I'm just asking yourself, Honourable Kachalia?
I wouldn't say it's illegal. What it would do, it would nullify the warranty. But you could do what you want to with it.
Right, yeah. Okay, now the DTI. What is your view there? Because it was specifically indicated that you would only agree really on the educational side. Is that correct or?
We support the proposal, Chair, in that we would like to have more issues of access, and
okay.
More access the better. Yeah.
Right. Now, you see, we're getting somewhere, and I think, Mashendri, I know that you are the expert here, and we are going to be listening very carefully tomorrow, right? Then Clause 20, Section 19C. Flagged. You see, I put a ring around that. The galleries. Everyone agreed to everything, and then the question arose about galleries. Are they really? Should these exceptions also be applicable to galleries? You see, I don't know. When you're looking, what is it? It's on libraries, museums. What was the other thing? Archives. Art galleries. Why not art galleries? There's the National Art Gallery going to pieces in the middle of Johannesburg and to a wreck there. I mean, yes, Dr. Masocha.
Chair, we looked at the issue of the galleries again. DAC had a concern about it, but then we said that according to the best practices, they include galleries with the others. And we are prepared to also look at how best we can simplify the model of galleries in the bill. But I will request Ms. Hendry just to add a bit on that argument.
You know, what was the DTI concerned with as well, Ms. Hendry?
Thank you, DDG, and Honourable Member Fass. I agree completely with the DDG. Even at the World Intellectual Property Organization, currently these are grouped together. And also, you're striking a balance. If I take you up to the artist resale right, remember the gallery in the secondary market is going to have to pay for that artwork. So now the flexibility will come in here, where you're giving them a little more room to maneuver in the exception, where we are possibly tying them down. So as legislators, you are actually creating that balance by keeping this group together in the exceptions. And you'll also notice in the text, we also say it's for non-commercial purposes.
Yes.
So we are not dealing directly with their commercial activities as well, if that creates some clarity for everyone. Thank you.
That's fine. I think we can move. Right. So we're ticking that, no longer flagged. We're then moving forward, no amendments then, right at the top of the page. Clause, page 27 of the bill, clause 22, section 21, ownership copyright. The clause currently provides that if there is not a contract, right, what I've written here is with, you know, commercialized work, the entity persons, the owners treated differently to the academia issue, which was for non-commercial purposes. But just, advocate, not everyone was on the same line here. We didn't all have the same agreement or thinking. Would you just go through that again? And I hope this time we will all converge. Oh, sorry, Honourable Buyani.
Thanks, Chair. I think she must also add the Canadian model so that we can be able to understand it broader. Thanks.
Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. If I could explain this, and if I can then ask, if I can hand to the DTI to talk to the Canadian model, I think they understand it better than I do. I am giving what I have received. Yeah, so I'm talking from hearsay knowledge. So what we have is that our clause on commissioned work says that if there is no contract, then the person who commissions the work is the copyright owner, and the author has a license to do anything with the work that the copyright owner may do. The problem that you have then is that in practice you have two people, a copyright owner and a person who is licensed to do exactly the same thing. So you are impacting on someone's rights somewhere, because maybe I want to publish this work and then I find that the licensed person has already published it. So that kind of off problem. What the DTI then proposed is, instead of the author, the person who was commissioned to do the work, having a license, that person can rather be given the opportunity to approach the tribunal and to ask the tribunal to grant that person permission to use the work. What the tribunal can then look at is what is the nature of the work. I know Honourable McPherson mentioned the issue of a family portrait. The tribunal will perhaps look at the work and say, this is a family portrait that hangs above someone's mantelpiece. You cannot make copies of this and just sell it to the public. It's a very good painting that you did, but you cannot. But on the other hand, the nature of the work might be a documentary that was what was done on commission from a big broadcasting company who just shelved it and said, no, there's no appetite for this documentary at this point in time. And then 5 years passed and it's still not being broadcast. Then the author can say, but it is a good documentary and I have people who would want to broadcast it. I would like to use it. So that is the kind of thing that the tribunal can look at, nature of the work. The tribunal will look at things like, why did the person who commissioned the work not use it? What is the public interest in granting this permission? And then the tribunal can also say there is a tariff that you, the author, will have to pay if you want to use the work. In other words, you will now kind of have to pay the royalties because you were commissioned. You're not the owner of the work, but you want to use it and you're going to make money from it. So there will be some tariffs to compensate the person who commissioned the work. But with that proposal, the DTI then also said maybe this should be currently removed from the bill and re-looked at. So the DTI is making two proposals on this. The one, that we have a different system where the author, instead of having a license, can approach the tribunal and ask for permission to use the work, and or two, that perhaps this should be removed from the bill totally and be panel-beated outside of the parliamentary process and brought back with another bill.
Well, I think then we must check with DTI directly on the matter, because you passed the comment. Dr. Masocha, you and Mashenbri.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, after the extensive discussions around commissioned work, we think that this section can be retained, because it affects a lot of interactions between the copyright holders and the other role players in copyright works. And so we think that the committee can look at the different views around this and then make a determination. Now, on the Canadian model was raised by the DAC when they raised their concern around the approach to this provision. Our bill, as it stands, says that whoever commissions owns the work, meaning if I pay for an artwork or a photography, I own that because I've commissioned it. And the model, the Canadian model, it says that even if you were commissioned but you are the author, you then have a bargaining power, meaning that it doesn't mean because I did not pay, I'm not the one who has a bigger voice in terms of the arrangement between the two parties. So it puts more emphasis on the author than the one who commissions. So these are like the opposite views, like making sure that the one who is not commissioning also has a power in the arrangement. But then the contractual arrangements are also key in this area of commissioning, meaning that
arrangements should be determined by the contract. But then the commissioning is about that, who commissions, and then the role of the author in that instance. Mishendra, you can add on that?
Thank you, everyone, again. So the provision makes the act, the principal act. It makes the commissioner of certain work the automatic owner, as the DDG said. But now the problem is that if you're a producer of a film or a director or the photographer, you have controlled the entire creative process.
Yes.
And the commissioning party is just the funder. And the practical problem that we're having in South Africa, in the South African context only, not the
yes.
Canadian, is that films and photographs and other works in South Africa are locked up in the archives. They're not used, as the advocate said, they're not aired, they're not being... So as the public, we're curtailed from access to that, from showing on a channel, and the works are locked up. So the Canadian model goes quite broad and open, and that's why the provision in the bill was to balance that, to make the contract first, to give you a negotiating power that you didn't have before. But even in the absence of that, you should be able to exercise some rights to earn a commercial an income. And yes, it would by de facto, I'm using it incorrectly, it will give you... Two parties will be able to exercise the same rights. That's why the Canadian model gave the author, but it's too open, and that's why we felt the proviso to limit it. But you should just have access to your work as a documentary filmmaker. And then, of course, the issue with the photographers also falls within this issue. But I think the DDG has cleared that up, that we need to look at it from all possible angles because of the wide number of works that are covered and locked up.
Right. I think for many members it hasn't taken us closer to a decision.
Yeah.
I'm not saying you haven't tried to explain it, but we need to take a decision here. Honourable Kachalia, Honourable Briani, Honourable Hadebe.
You're right, Chair. It's,
yeah.
It's not easy. I mean, if I commission something...
Yeah, I
commission something. I then may decide to do what I want to with that at one level. I may decide I don't like the painting of me. I don't like the way it's been depicted. I may wish to destroy that painting and burn it. And then would that give rights under what you proposing to arise in that person saying, how dare you destroy that because I have rights associated with that? It's complex. I mean, I think the commissioner certainly has rights which need to be protected. It comes down to contract, verbal and non-verbal contract, both, to whether in the contractual arrangement when you commission something, whether the owner then the author or the creator then says, well, yes, you have these rights now, or the author says, actually, I want some rights of access. Then with reference to the contract, the rights of access are clear. And if you agree on those rights of access, hallelujah, you've got something that you can move on. But in the absence of any contractual arrangement, surely the commissioner, the rights vest with the commissioner to do what they want to with it. I mean, it would make... In practical sense, that makes sense to me.
Right, Honourable Briani.
Chair, thanks, man. I'm looking at the principal act here, vis-a-vis the one that we have in here with the bill. It says that subject to the provision of the section, the ownership of any copyright conferred by section 3 or 4 on any work shall vest in the author. Or the case of the work of the joint authorship. So I'm not so sure what is it that is not good here. So that we check vis-a-vis the bill that we currently dealing with.
All right, we're going to take the Honourable Hadebe, and then Mishendra, did you want to come in at this point?
Chairperson, this thing comes at two different levels. Certain work can be personal. Just like a family portrait.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way I'm going to grant any person, any other person, a rightful access of my family portraits. That one is period. Freedom of association is in the constitution of the country. Can never agree to that. You know. But number two, there are works in the commercial sphere, you know, whereby I made an example last week. Let's say, Honorable Mantashe starts a company. She wants a logo for that particular company. She gives some ideas. In the logo, I expect I'm going to deal with an aquamarine type of business. There must be waves. There must be birds. You know?
No.
But as to how many birds, she does not see. But you can see that there's an original idea. It's coming from where what she wants. There must be birds. There must be a river. There must be sand around that logo.
No.
It is her idea. That idea, it means that it's from her, although you cannot copyright an idea, but the issue is that photo will not come up unless she had requested that. She must have access to that. But then we have another situation, Jeff. Let's say I start a company. I don't even have an idea of the logo. So the person, I say that my company is in the IT business. The person I'm commissioning is going to come with a total 100% idea what type of the logo can come. So that person can have more rights than any other person. But the other aspect again, which must be married upon, is the issue of financial strength between the commissioner and the creator. I think that when you go down there, it's true that there can be an agreement. But if someone who's a billionaire is commissioning someone so small like me, he's going to dominate me. So there must be some sort of a protection. This one, as I said, that one thing I see, but the protection must be across the board. There are certain things where the commissioner must be able to retain the work. But there are times where this creator must be able to gain access to royalties, moving in particular if it's going to be exploited commercially. Thank you.
Yeah, all right. We just let Honorable Charlie come in there. He's just thought of something.
I just want to ask a practical example in response to that. Let's, for example, assume that Mr. Zuma starts a new party.
Another interesting example.
What if
each one of you can then have your little bite, but allow the speaker
assume Mr. Zuma starts a new party, and
he can also start a new party.
Yes. Honorable Mantashe, there's no need for a point of order. I'm just trying to get Honorable Kachalia to speak.
Yeah, sorry, Chair, but I just want to, in defense of my colleague, he is trying to make a substantive point. And Chair, as the Honorable Mantashe continues to interject and harass the member, please can I ask that you rule that is unparliamentary, and in fact the Honourable Kachalia has a right to express himself in whichever form he chooses to, and that the members unfortunately will have to hear what he has to say and then they can respond. But I would please ask you to protect the member.
That is what we are trying to do. Now, Honourable Kachalia, what I do want from you is this. Honourable Kadebi put something on the table about logos, etc. Now, let's keep it in that substantive form. Go ahead.
I intend to keep it in. The reason why I chose this example, because A, it entered my head, B, it was pertinent, and might be very clear, and I'll continue along those lines. If Mr. Zuma decided to start a
motorcycle... On a point of order, Chair. On a point of order, Chair. These things are recorded.
Yes.
These conversations are recorded. So we will not agree with his attitude, because really I think that he's hating on the political space now. I think that the members have got a right to defend their eyes. They've got a right to defend. Why not use an imaginary party? Whatever it might be.
Let's put it an entirely different way.
No, she is provoking us, Jefferson.
No, he is, but allow me to put it slightly differently. Now, what we were looking at here is the personal branding and ownership, etc. Whether it is this political leader or that political leader, I think the issue is if a political leader decides to start a new party, to leave his or her party and start his or her own party, then can they be allowed to use what logo? I understand that's where you were going.
That's exactly where I was getting at. I'm referring to the issue of logo, and I'm exemplifying it in a current example, which should be clear to us all, because we all operate in this arena. Now, if I may continue, if a particular person, in this case, for example, President Zuma,
let us not specify any particular leader. I thought I'd made that clear. Honourable Mantash, your mic is still on. Just a minute. Right. With all the mics off, what is your point, Honourable MacPherson?
Chairperson, I think it's very important that you rule whether it is unacceptable or unparliamentary for the Honourable Kachalia to cite as an example an individual, regardless of what the political affiliations of that individual. Are you saying that he may not cite Mr. Jacob Zuma as an example in trying to make the point as in relation to the context of what he is trying to say? Because I think it's very important that you make that ruling and protect Mr. Kachalia's freedom to make the point that he wants to protect his freedom of expression, to protect his right to say what he wants in this committee. And I would ask you to rule on that, please.
You see why I try to avoid this, Honourable MacPherson, is that it then entitles everyone to go the same. No, it's actually, to me, not fine, because we get away from the substantive argument, and that is why it's not fine. But in the House, where often the substance of an argument is lost, I don't preside that often in the House. But I do know the importance of remaining within the substance of the issue. The substance of this issue is not the individual. And therefore, there's no reason why, in order to enable us to get moving, we do not indicate and say, if a political leader, there is no need to mention an example. Right now, in the South Africa, several political leaders are being focused upon in all parties, and we all know that that is a reality. This is an election year, and we can so easily derail legislation if we go down that street. So my ruling is, because there is no such thing as this or that being unparliamentary with people's names, but my ruling in respect of completing the work that is on the table is to ask members to refrain from mentioning the names, but rather to generalize. That is my ruling.
Chairperson, and that is not the, with respect what I asked you. Is the Honourable Kachalia going to be able to proceed with his line of make an example, or is he going to be harangued by the members to his left, and will you protect him?
I've already told you how I will protect him. I've asked him to generalise. I don't want a political leader's name mentioned in the room at the moment, given the current environment in our country, whether it's Cape Town, Gauteng, or wherever.
Chairperson, please note that I will be taking that on review with the Speaker, because I think it is completely unacceptable.
Right, you are entitled to do that.
May I continue, given the ruling? If a leader, a former leader of a political party, chooses to start a new party and leaves the incumbent party, which has a particular logo, which, shall we say, is in three colors, one of which is green and the other black, then and commissions and the new part, the party that then commissions the someone to create a logo for them, because the leader who's left the party has claim that logo, and the courts have said you can have that logo. So now the new party needs a new logo, and they commission somebody to create a new logo, and they say you should please put a color of yellow in it, and perhaps a spear and a shield in it.
Yeah.
And that then someone creates this, and that, and the reason I use those examples and continue to use elements of the example because it's pertinent, it might exercise members' minds, is that then the owner of that, the creator of that particular logo,
yes,
where does that, to the chief, to the whip's point, where does, what rights vest with the creator? Can the creator say, now that I've created a new logo for your party, here it is, do I have any rights as the creator of that logo, not the commissioner of that logo, to use that willy-nilly here, there, and everywhere, under what circumstances? I suspect that the new political party would say, High Corner, you can't. And that is the point I wish to make, and I will say that I wish I were able to make it using names and examples, because I had no malintent. All I was trying to do was to create this particular point, which I believe to be pertinent to discussion. Thank you.
What I was going to say when you had finished, although I realized the direction you would be going in, is that we have had several disputes on these logos used in elections, of which you are all well aware, which are borderline issues, colors perhaps being the same as another party, even names being so closely aligned, and you know, people claiming title, different parties to words such as Congress and so on. All of those have been the subject of court cases, as we all know. However, in the final analysis, when it came down to that, in terms of elections, that's all I'm talking of, the IEC did not rule the respective parties out at that time. So I'm just adding that aspect, but I hear what you are saying. Then what? If it passes muster through the courts, if you want to put it that way, it gets through the IEC, then the question being, just repeat it for us, the question is?
Where does the ownership or access to that logo,
right,
the creator says, I have certain rights, as the Honourable Member was saying, the creator should have. And I'm saying, well then, in this particular case, can the creator say, I have rights to that logo, and the political party says, well, it's our logo, goodness, we created it, and you can't go and plaster it anywhere else without our permission.
All right, I think the question is clear, Ms. Mashendri.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to complicate everything again. The question on the logo is very good, except it's not under copyright law. It's under the trademark law. Yeah. If you look at the Nando's logo, Coke, etc., the colors that you use. And also if you look at the section we're dealing with, it's very specific. It says photograph, painting, drawing, portrait, making of a gravure. So the logo will fall under your trademark law. And trademarks are also the only form of intellectual property that you'll renew your registration, so it's perpetual ownership. And then if someone is passing off your mark as the owner, let's say Coke and Pepsi or whatever, you have the the tribunal there. And then through my DDG, we'd just like to make a proposal on this section on 21.3c with the graviers and the paintings, because what we've picked up is that obviously the painting is a very personal nature. So as we did with the artist resale rights, how about we limit this section? So we exclude works from such as the painting, the making of a gravure, etc., but then what will be applicable is the areas that are subject to abuse, photographs, sound recordings, films. That's the proposal the DTI would like to make, that we limit this section, and then those personal artistic works then fall out of the scope of protection.
Right. Honourable Tiako?
Thanks, Chair. I think we requested them to present tomorrow. Let them go and agree and bring it to the committee tomorrow. Complete as it is, it's fine.
Are we agreed on that point?
Yes.
Yeah. All right, we are moving then. That is clause 22-21, and then we move. And that is still, no, the contract one, I think, is still in connection with that, Advocate van der Merwe. So we then move to clause 23, section 22. And this is the 25 years issue. And the 25 years, as I now understand it, is saying that where I am the owner of something, the copyright has to assign the right 50 years in accordance with X. If the assignment in South Africa is for the remainder, is for a maximum of 25 years. And I understand this was brought up because, in fact, prior to much of our legislation, I forgot you had a point to make, Honourable Tiako, didn't you?
No, our argument was the other countries, they're saying 50, we are saying 25, then what will happen on that gap that is created there? So the explanation that are going there, we need to also cover our own people, because it can be local, then internationally doesn't apply. That gap, we need to close it.
Yes. And let's get it straight. Who is it protecting? And we need to know. We know who we want to protect. And what is the challenge here, Honourable Khadebe?
Chairperson, when dealing with that aspect, I think the issue of resource, the issue of doing what I do to you, do unto me. Let's say if it is an American type of system, when it comes to South Africa, it must be 25 years, because let's say it's up to 25 years. It is the law of the country. But then when the very same work of the South African goes to America, where it is 50 years, it must also be treated the same as we're going to treat them on the side, because on their local law, it is 50 years.
All right. I'm looking at the committee.
Yes. All right.
So there we no longer flag.
Well,
are we agreed, Advocate
Van der Merwe? I'm sorry, Chair. I'm not sure that I follow what
you
were saying.
I know.
I'm trying to write it down, and while I'm thinking it out, if I can just maybe make one thing clear, what the 25 years year means is that if I as an author assign a right to someone else, now that person uses the right that I've assigned. So for instance, they use my song, and it is now contracted to a company in America to use in a film. The contract for that use of the song is 50 years. Now, after 25 years, the work, that assignment stops, and the rights comes back to me as author after 25 years. And the remaining 25 years is then what the question was about. And what I propose is that we simply have to say that even though the rights come back to you, you need to honor any existing contract that might still be ongoing. But at least I will start getting the payment again on it. So the thing of extending the period is on, is not the period, we must not look at the 50 years that America has. It is about the period within which I cannot get my rights back.
So, and that is where the DGI was saying it should not be more than 25 years. After 25 years, you should get your rights back. Mm-hmm. If you then want to reassign it at that point in time, you can do so.
I think that surely that does help. Honourable Esterhazen.
Yes, thank you. What if the, if it's assigned to more than one person? So, I mean, what's the point then? The author wouldn't even get the royalties. If it's assigned to more than one person, doesn't that then dramatically to change this? Thank you.
Well, if it's two authors, you know, you wrote something jointly or a song, then surely it would amount to the same thing, Honourable Esterhazen. You wrote together, you wrote something, and you then both agreed that we're going to give this to X to use, that surely you would want the right to earn your royalties again or have a choice after 25 years. Would you like to just comment, the Honourable Esterhazen?
Well, then go to the advocate.
If it is, so in other words, as an author, when I assign, look, I can't assign something that I've already assigned. I can't assign more rights than I have. I can only assign the rights that I have as an author. So I assign my rights to one person. I cannot, on, I assign my rights on the 4th of June. I cannot on the 5th of June go and assign my rights to a second person. That's the first thing. So if I've assigned my rights to two people on the same day, there would be some agreement how that would work. So in other words, let's say it was something, I might have a song and I assign my rights to both someone who's going to play the song and to someone who's going to play it, and that person's going to play it in a movie, and we have a contract with everyone together. After 25 years, from both parties, it simply comes back. If we go the next step, so I've now assigned it to one person, and that person then contracts with five movie producers to use the same song. The principle is still that it comes back to me after 25 years, and then all the contracts with the five movie producers, I simply will have to honour however many contracts there are. So I don't see a problem if there's more than one person, and I think that the working of the law will sort it out.
Thank you very much. I'm looking at a legislative drafter there as well, Mabasa Mavunga. I think she looks happy enough there as well, huh?
Chair, I was trying to get the DDT to request if we can look at it, because I just have a few concerns where I've already assigned for 25 years. Where else there's a third party is contracting somewhere, I'm not party to that contract, and when the assignment revert back to me, now I'm made party to something that I was not party of. So we just want an opportunity where we can look at it and see if maybe contracts shouldn't go beyond the assignment period.
No, a good idea, and that's why we're giving you this opportunity tomorrow to come back to us. All right, let's move on then. And we go to clause 24, section 22A, licenses as well as assignment and licenses. Well, there was one question here. Why did I have a question here? Maybe contained what? Under hybrid. Okay, that was just a question that I had myself. But we've dealt with that. And then we move to clause 25, collecting societies. And then we took a decision, you know, this morning, and you're going to be able to come back to me, I think, Ms. Naidu, or was it Dr. Masocha, about the CIPC coming tomorrow. What is the position there? I don't know.
Chair, as far as they've indicated, is that they will be here tomorrow.
Yeah. And we will express ourselves the challenge it poses when people do not arrive. We'll express that ourselves. Right, clause 1A, sections 22A to 22F. That's a huge issue with collecting societies, and in the bill it's pages 30 to 34. And we flagged, and I got from no one that this was going to be an agreement. So we must then go through them, seeing as we don't have a general agreement. So we go to the bottom. What is it? It's clause 1A. It was an entirely new chapter at the bottom of the page there, going over to page 34. Registration and accreditations, is that right? The top of page 31, rather. But that's not right. It's 31. It should be 34 I've written here. But it's 32, 34, so there we are. This is the right area that we flagged, I think, Advocate, going from 22A right through to the end. To 22F, remember, right. Now, it's flagged, the 22A to 22F. Concerns raised about the limit of one collecting society per right. But I thought members had already indicated, was it such a good idea to limit it to one? That was what the argument seemed to be. And shouldn't we have more? So what is the position of members then? Yes, Honourable Buyani.
Thanks, Chair. I think we indicated earlier on that it's not going to be proper for one collecting society per right, because it limits the participation of or the masses. And also we must check as to why are we reviewing this. It's because the masses are not benefiting from it. And also there are these big conglomerates that they are operating the system, hence we want at least them, all of them, to get at least a piece. And also we checked in terms of the registration, whether those collecting society are registered with the CIPC and are they complying with the regulations of South Africa, because seemingly these people are here for fronting and their own purposes. But we don't see a principle of localization and the triple BEE as we have indicated. And also in terms of the licensing and the transformation, are we in the 24 years be able to transform the situation, or are we still stuck in the post-1994? And also the question of membership, whether all the members, because this collecting society, they are begging for one membership. All of them, they are collecting for different categories, but they've got one membership. So I think those are the challenges. And in terms of the, it has to be properly regulated as to which and how they should be doing this. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Biani. Honourable
Kachalia. As the Chair, the DTI pointed out earlier on, these collecting societies are not-for-profit organizations. And it's my view that there should be no restriction on, provided they follow the correct procedure and register, to set up any number of not-for-profit organizations in this particular sphere to provide a service. On the other side of the coin, there is ultimate choice must lie with the consumer to decide with which collecting organization they will go. Then there's the question of the regulation of this organization, which is a separate issue. But I don't see how this fits into any forcing of particular organizations to change them in particular ways, or to have BEE strictures placed upon them. These are NPOs providing a service. The consumer says, I will go with you. We regulate the way that particular organization works and make sure that the money comes to the people who've signed up with them to get the money, end of story. I don't see any issue other than that. Thank you.
I've just made one note here. The issue, did I see? The one note I've got here is that there was a query around the tribunal, and shouldn't this all go to the CIPC? Do you remember that was raised here? Now I'm looking at members. This came from yourselves about perhaps the a tribunal will be, there'll be too much pressure on it, and we need to refer this to the CIPC. Now I'm looking at all of you. Is that the case? You want this referred to the CIPC? Honourable Khadebe?
Chairperson, we agree that the issue of registration will rest with that one. But when coming to the issue of the issue of accreditation,
yeah,
which was going to come with that, that's why we wanted the difference so that they can explain to us. Mm-hmm. But when coming to the issue of the non-profit organization, Chair, these guys are collecting money, yes, on behalf of the artist, but at the end of the day, they take a cut. So although they say they're non-profit, but we know that they're making profit. I can make an example. FIFA, as a federation, is a non-profit organization, but there's no federation making as much money as FIFA in the world. So I think this issue of non-profit organization must not close our eyes. Thank you, Chair.
No, I think, yeah, the FIFA is quite a very good example. all right, but now what I'm going to note here is that we'll also raise this with CRPC, you know, because we need their input on this as well. Am I correct here? Yes. We then move on to clause 26. 20. Yes, Dr. Masocha?
Okay, what I would like to request is just to give a bit of context in terms of what they have indicated to us as far as some of these issues are concerned. They will strengthen that on their own behalf. The issue around registration and accreditation, they raised because the CIPC is responsible for the registration of different types of companies.
Yeah.
And these NPOs are registered by CIPC. So they said the better wording or the better approach is to focus on the accreditation, because with the accreditation, then you assess a particular company or the NPO and you make sure that it aligns to certain criteria. So you accredit, meaning you validate them. So they wanted to separate registration from accreditation in that regard, because you register it like you register your public company, and then you accredit, then we make sure you meet a particular requirement. So that's the one about that. And then the one about the one collecting society per right. CRPC believes that we should not allow more than two collecting society on the same right because of the challenges they have experienced in the market, where these collecting societies, they fight for members to a point where they take each other to courts. They take one another to courts, and some of them have not been able to get off the ground. They've collapsed over time. So their argument is that in any case, the market is not so saturated where you have many of them, and it's easier to focus on one than on two, given the tussles, and it has affected royalty payments because of some of those challenges.
Right. I'm going to take one or two hands, Honourable Buyani.
Chairperson, thanks, man. I just wanted the clarity from the DG as to what is happening current situation. There are two of them. They spoke about the Impra and Sampra. There are only two, but the beneficiaries are not getting anything there. So I want to check what is the challenge on that one. Then also, in terms of the registration, all companies, NPO or any church, they must be registered. So that even if you are an NPO but you must have a tax, government must know that somewhere, somehow, you used to benefit through Mnikelo, willing or anything. But NPO must be registered as well. So that is what I wanted to check.
looking at something right here. This is what you were given, I believe, by DTI, the background. Since the promulgation of regulations, the following collecting societies were accredited. Certainly got more than one. SAMPRA, the South African Performance Rights Association, SAMRO, South African Music Rights Organization, CAPASO. I didn't even know about CAPASO. Composers, Authors, Publishers Association, PORSA, Performance Organization of South Africa's Trust, and SARL, South African Recording Rights Association. So currently we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, each addressing what I would call different sectors, but I suppose you would call them different rights. Is that so? So what the committee is saying is that we don't want half a dozen collecting agencies for performers. I hope I'm getting this correct. Yeah, Honourable Kacharia?
Well, I'm not sure that I'm saying that. I'm saying that these are service providers who get accredited, get registered according to normal procedure. Once they pass muster and accredited and registered, then they, as a service provider, collect money on behalf of a number of people. And if people put faith in them, then it's the responsibility of the regulators to ensure that they that money that is collected is paid out and that the accreditation was done properly. If there are 26 of them vying for one right, the market will sort that out on the basis of who provides the best service. Mm-hmm. And that's how it should be. That's what I'm saying.
I used to go along with that thinking until the taxi wars. No, and a marketing agent was brought in to share some how the market works in this area with us. Not a politico at all, a technical person. And what they had said to us as legislators, if one wants to put it that way, and we were not talking about the ANC per se, but generally, that actually the market isn't big enough to have all of these, and that is why Taxi A is saying, this is my route, this is my route, and, you know, and then the guns come out, etc. The market is oversaturated, is what we were told, and that's one of the reasons responsible for some of the taxi violence. Not the only reason, but one of them. So having heard that about 4 or 5 years back, does make me think twice when I'm told, look, this is not such a big market, it's a medium income market or whatever, it's a middle market. It makes one cautious about whether you want to restrict or open things. So I'm just mentioning that, Honourable Kacharia. It's not a decision or an opinion I'm putting here, but sharing information with all of my colleagues. So there we are. There seems to be a view that, you know, more than one would be better, you'd get a fairer price, etc. We've heard from the Honourable Wiani that, well, some of them are not even paying out, etc. We've heard from, I think it may have been the Advocate or DTI that, or perhaps the Honourable Kadebi, that some of these entities are collapsing. So, you know, there are 3 issues on the table here, or 4. So I think we're all going to have the night to think this over. Let's think about it and tomorrow come with a firmer position to take forward. Can we do that? Right. And we almost finished, Chair Members, because we're only taking flags, remember. The technological issue noted here, Clause 27, Section 27. They clash the exceptions and limitations. That, I think, Advocate, you did explain to us, and no one seemed to have a serious different view, but just mention it again.
Chief, in respect of the
technological protection measures. It was just that in the presentation of DTI, they wrote this sentence to just say it must be carefully considered because it prevents abuses of copyrighted works, especially digitally, but they also clash with exceptions and limitations. And then this applies to clause 28 and 29 as well. So there is probably no problem, but like I said, DTI highlighted it that that we must just be very cautious with this measure.
Yeah.
Going back to it now, this is this one here, the on clause 27, section 27. Do members want to just think about it? It's a very technical issue. I'm looking at all of you. We perhaps think about it and come back on it. And then we go to clause 30.
Okay.
Yes, Honourable Mantash?
I would imagine because it is a technical matter, the technocrats must deal with it. We are not, we are just politicians. We will mess up.
I'm
saying, Chairperson, since it's a technical matter, let's give it to technocrats to deal with it so that we don't mess it up with politicians, not technocrats.
No. Oh, in fact, you're coming round to what researcher Ms. Madalani was also saying. Maybe this is some more work for DTI to come back on. All right. Okay, fine. So then we move ahead to the next one, clause 30, heading of chapter 3. This clause is subject to the decision taken in respect of 31. And 31 says, DTI proposes to remove the establishment of IP, but to strengthen the copyright tribunal. And what have I written here? If we retain, no need to address. Oh, is that so what are we saying then? Honourable Mantash.
I earlier on, Chairperson, proposed that we strengthen the tribunal, the copyright tribunal, instead of establishing a new body.
That was earlier statements. I'm not
sure if everyone took that into account. And I said if we do decide to retain that, there's no need to keep on flagging it. Right. And then we move ahead to everything flagged, clause 32, 29A. So I think that's probably 47 or something. Clause 32. What is it? What page? The functions. You see, that's all to do with the functions of the tribunal. And if I'm listening to what you've just said, that you want, you rather would seek to strengthen the tribunal. Yes, DG.
Thank you, Chair. What we would like to propose, Chair, is that we come back on the tribunal because strengthening it will affect all the other, most of the clauses that talk to the establishment of the IP tribunal. And also we looked at the issue of the legality of the patent legislation. And our proposal is that maybe if we are not going to violate any legislative drafting or legal requirements, we can establish, because the current Act does have a copyright tribunal. It's established already in the legislation. So we can strengthen the existing provisions. Now, in terms of the commissioner, his powers, and then other mechanisms that can be used to implement it, including other mechanisms like your legal aid, we are requesting, Chair, that without necessarily the amendment of the Patent Act, if we can add what we want in the copyright legislation, if that is allowable, we should rather take that approach than the approach of amending another legislation. So maybe later on, when that happens, that part can be done. But it's subject to whether this is something that can be done. So we can put what we want within the Copyright Act itself, amending it, rather than amending another legislation.
Wow. Now, look, that makes sense. Let's streamline, let's rationalize. I see here on page 42 of the bill, terms of the office, members of the tribunal, etc. And what I would ask the DTI to check out, because it is a decision that this committee took some time ago when it became apparent that there were different terms of office for this entity, that entity, and the next. Some it's 3, some it's 5, some it's 7. Let's try and rationalise this whole thing instead of chop and change, etc. And who's going to be identifying the people concerned, etc. And how are they going to be appointed? We must try and have, broadly speaking, one approach to this matter and not half a dozen. So you would assist the committee if you could come back tomorrow and let us know where we stand in this regard. We're coming towards the end here because all of that is flagged and concerns, as members are well aware, the tribunal until you get to conflict of interest. And yes, I am aware that it's now 4:10, but I thought it's very little and we could just quickly get through the flags. It would assist DTI. All of this on the conflict, the tribunal, I'm leaving, because we said they're going to come back to us on that issue. But the conflict and disclosure interest, more recently it's become subject of much inquiry even in this parliament, that entities, members of various entities and tribunals do not understand what a conflict of interest is. And I would hope that we've made that very, very clear under clause 32, 29F, because I see it at the bottom of page 42. If during a hearing in which a member of the tribunal is participating, it appears to the member that the matter concerns a financial or other interest. You see the word other interest of the member contemplated here. The member must immediately fully disclose the fact and nature of such interest. So we are all asked to ensure that our legislation doesn't invite conflicts of interest. So just go through this very carefully, and how the withdrawal should be, and that they may not do X and Y or divulge any of the information. It didn't, you know, I noticed that members had flagged this, but I'm asking the chairperson of the subcommittee and the chairperson, Honourable Debbie, who chaired that meeting, why that was flagged. Was it for a clarification to make that conflict of interest clearer, or what? That's clause 32.29, the one I've just been reading, on page 42 and 43. Yeah. So I'm just asking, maybe it was because members are like myself concerned that this has come up so much recently, we should ensure that we've addressed it. Yeah. Is that it? Yes. Advocate van der Merwe.
Gee, all of these sections are part of the bigger issue on whether it should be a copyright tribunal or an intellectual property tribunal. If we retain copyright tribunal, then all of these sections will be deleted because the Act already provides for this, but in relation to copyright tribunal. So the flagging, I mean, what you are saying is very valid, but once we, if there is a decision that it should be an intellectual property tribunal, then we need to look at all of these questions.
Yeah. Honourable Tiako, followed by the Honourable Hadebe.
No, Chair, if the other one, we also need to request from the House. Can you clarify, or is just...
The Act currently provides for a copyright tribunal, so it's in the Act already. What we will be doing is, because we will, look, we have a redraft, so it's not exactly the same as rejecting a clause that you would brew with an A-list. But in principle, what we will be doing is we will say, no, we don't want the IP tribunal as it is in the bill.
we will stay with the copyright tribunal. Then what we can do is we will just have to see how far the strengthening goes. If it, no, I don't think we'll have to ask permission from the House. We might have to advertise because the bill does deal with the tribunal issue.
Okay, Chair. I think the decision was for us to come and take a decision on retaining the tribunal or what. That's what is going to assist us moving forward on finalizing this matter, Chair.
Thanks, Honourable Chioko. Honourable Hadebe.
Chairperson, an in-principle decision was taken that we strengthen the powers of the commissioner and then let's retain the copyright tribunal.
So you'll be looking at that and he'll be coming back to us, DTI, on some suggestions. That's, again, some more work tomorrow. The one area that I thought we could have just commented on was right at the end of that matrix on the same page, clause 32, section 29B, page 47 of the bill. DAC suggested that the cost of the tribunal to the indigent legal aid as a necessity to ensure that it was there. But I understood, and but I need to be clarified by the advocate, that legal aid is open to any individual, is it not, at any point in time? Yeah. Chair, it is, but what we need to just confirm is whether the relevant rules and act that applies, if it also makes it available to tribunals. So we need to just see, because what we're dealing with here is not a court, it's a tribunal, which is a form of court, but we need to just make sure exactly what the Act says. And then the lessons that we've learned with the National Credit Amendment Bill, even if the Act says something, it is not necessarily how it is applied in practice. So we might just need to confirm with Justice that if the Act says you can do it to any legal body, that they interpret it as tribunal. All right, thank you. Honourable Tierko?
Thanks, Chair. I think with that note, can she also check, because I know other tribunals, they're equivalent to the magistrate court, they are ruling,
that's
you
right.
Can do an appeal in the High Court. So we also need to do that on this one, to say the ruling, you can also go to High Court too.
I think this is it. That would be included for the advocate just to clarify for us, if possible, tomorrow. But, I mean, the day now is virtually over for your extra work, as it were. Clause on the next page, a lot of this is being flagged for the tribunal, which we said we're dealing with separately. Clause 35, section 39B, unenforceable contractual term. I thought we dealt with issues that were unenforceable, but just remind us about this again, because what I've written here is that clause 36, schedule 2, part A, protects the vulnerable. So just clarify. Yes, it does protect the vulnerable. The question just is, we then give an exception in our bill, and two of the exceptions, one is a settlement agreement and the other is a service license. So in other words, we allow after there has been a dispute and parties are settling, that they can then contract themselves out of the Act again. And the question is, are we sure that that is what we want? Because remember, if your person was vulnerable at the time of entering into the contract, they're going to be vulnerable at the time of settlement. So the same principles apply. And then the service license. Service license surely is it sounds like a formal document. And perhaps DTI can just explain to us what is envisaged with the service license and why can you, with a service license, exclude protection that the Act is giving to a person.
Again, that's
DTI taking note. Thank you. I'm looking then at the next clause we needed to, it was flagged, item 4.2A, this must be under the schedule, scope and conditions. It would appear to be page 53.
of the license. What I see written probably by yourself here, advocate, is this clause does not make sense. What is the intention with this clause so that it can be worded to reflect the intention? Copies of the translation published under a license may be sent abroad by the government or public entity if the translation is into a language other than the language used in the Republic that will be of use. Yes. Could you explain your difficulty to us, advocate?
With respect to the almost from here up until the end on the schedule, it is very technical questions. It is about the correct language. I don't think that it is really policy. It sounds like it's policy questions, but I think it's more technical questions. The clauses that I've pointed out, one after the other, it's just something small that doesn't make sense. Something small that seems vague. Maybe we need a definition. So what I would propose is, if DTI is going to come back to us tomorrow, perhaps they can just talk to each of these and give an idea to the committee what is the better phrase to use. And then if we then from that explanation see that there is a policy question, then we can focus on that policy question.
Yeah. I'm looking at yourself, Machinery. You've had years in this area, and you must be a technocrat of note in this area, huh? I'm just asking you, and you've heard what our advocate is saying in that regard, because there's a whole reference to this throughout. And it's not policy. I'm looking at the DDG as well, Dr. Masoja. It's not policy. But at the same time, all of us have become aware how things are brushed off as technical, and you quickly adopt it as technical. And no sooner have you adopted it in the House, then you find, this was a huge policy issue. So obviously we are trying to help one another here, so we would certainly ask the DTI if they, would raise these issues. What we've said are technical, you may see that they're not. They involve a policy of some form. Let me hear what the Honourable Tierko has to say so that you respond to both of us, Dr. Masoja. Honourable Tierko?
No, I think it's form part of the conclusion, because the work that we have said they must bring tomorrow is a lot of work.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, while sitting here, is it possible at this time? Unless there will be a miracle, I don't know, Chair, but really, we need to do justice. We don't want to measure tomorrow because we'll be angry there. And the technical part of it, the constitutionality around the issue, and the issue of police, because she must be able to tell us, these are policy issues, this is constitutional, everything.
Right.
We don't want to come tomorrow and we'll listen to the story of a dog and a cat and so on.
All right, just a minute, one moment. Members, DTI are going to respond through Dr. Masoja, but what I am suggesting, we've seen how long it took us today, and I don't think we wasted any time. It's going to be 4:30. We should start at 10:30 tomorrow to give them time to deal with a lot of these issues, because you're really going to be under the whip tomorrow, DTI, and you know that. And we would like you to become effectively prepared as much as possible. And then I'm going to ask the members, we did say let us ensure that Fridays becomes almost sacrosanct. So let us try and work at the mat till 6:00 if necessary, if we have to, tomorrow night. Looking at all members, I think that's a good idea myself. I'm looking at those who catch buses. I believe there is a later bus.
It's 8:00 bus.
Oh, So you're suggesting, yes, Honourable Kachalia?
Earlier on I committed to a meeting at 5.
Tomorrow?
Yes, so I gave a firm commitment, not knowing that we're going to do it. So, and it's reasonably close, so, but I need to be there at 5.
Now I hear what you're saying. Let us hope your colleague, although you are playing the larger role in this particular bill, that's evident to me, perhaps being in the subcommittee. So we'll try to, I think the buses, and I'm just looking at the logistics side, is 5:30. Honourable Hadebe?
Chairperson, I think that the people who can actually explain whether they'll finish before 10:30 tomorrow is the department and the advocate. You know. Let's get it from their view, from their side. That's why I committed them even last week, that it must be in on record. Will you be ready at 10:30, or can we start later in the afternoon, whatever? What is it if you are comfortable with what you have to do?
Yeah. All right. Let's get yourself DDG.
Okay. Thank you, Honourable Members, and thank you, Chair. It is true, the work is quite a lot. And it is true, we don't want to compromise on the quality. So we request a split of the issues. Instead of addressing all the flat issues, maybe some of the technical areas that were highlighted today, we can say we put them on Thursday. And then we do a split. We start with some of the issues up to maybe, let's say, collecting societies. And then on Thursday, we address the other issues, including the technical issues.
You're basically talking about the tribunal, you know, and the technical issues, am I right?
So that will be the tribunal and the technical issues. And then tomorrow we can start at 10:30, Chair.
All right. Members, let's, we do want to work, keep everyone on board. And also we have commitments. So it'll continue until 5 tomorrow, starting at 10:30. Are we agreed? And just on that note, we just look back here and we see, you know, that so much of this has become a technical item that for today then, I can safely say that we have addressed as much as we can effectively. We are looking forward to CIPC, and perhaps you all to just caution them that we'll be looking at a valid written apology. Thank you. When members raise it in that tone to the chair, it means they are very concerned. All right. So let's just address things properly. Thank you to everyone who was here early, and to the department, it is a hard slog, and to the advocate Charmaine van der Merwe, I hope you have still got time to take your dog for a walk and so on. All right. Thank you very much. Meeting adjourned till tomorrow. In which venue?
Yeah,
same venue. Right. 10:30. Forget, bring all of your documents. No photostatting tomorrow. Thank you.